Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Damage Report. You're over there, I'm over here. I'm Johnny Nerola. We got a lot that we're gonna be talking about today. Not only is today the big charging day, impeachment charges finally being declared. We're gonna have video of Nadler and Pelosi and all of them giving those, you know, actually putting like words to our, you know, our guesses. How many are there going to be? Less, it turns out, than we thought. But I'm gonna analyze both what they are gonna be charging Donald Trump with and what they're not gonna be charging Donald Trump with. And then once we get past the big impeachment juggernaut of the day, Jordan Yule is gonna be joining me. We're gonna be walking through some of the important news of the day, including reactions to the IG report finally coming out. Some of them accurate, useful, some of them delusional. We'll have both of those for you. Who might be the Time Person of the Year? There are some good choices, and there's also Donald Trump. So we're gonna be talking about that. Buttigieg, by the way, reacting to criticism of his closed door fundraisers. And then we've got analysis of the Golden Globes Awards. We've got a lot that we're going to get to, but we're gonna be starting off with impeachment. This morning, press conference with Democratic leadership announcing the charges against Donald Trump. We're gonna have Nadler talking about each of those, but first, the announcement of sort of why they are going forward with the process, how important it is that they do so.
Over the last several months, the investigative committees of the House have been engaged in an impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump's efforts to solicit foreign interference in the 2020 elections, efforts that compromised our national security and threatened the integrity of our elections. Throughout this inquiry, he has attempted to conceal the evidence from Congress and from the American people. Our president holds the ultimate public trust. When he betrays that trust and puts himself before country, he endangers the Constitution, he endangers our democracy, and he endangers our national security.
You know, I don't always agree with Nadler, but I like there that he sums up sort of why this matters. What are the stakes in this entire thing? And it's important that he does that because I feel like it should be obvious, but so few of the people discussing this over the past few months, so little of the conversation has actually been about that. I've been bothered by this the entire time, talked about it quite often, but the willingness with which much of the political media has focused almost exclusively on optics and electoral consequences and how this might or might not affect voters in one particular battleground state in a year, that's been really depressing and it hasn't gone away. I didn't end up doing a segment on this, but over the weekend, SC Cup had a long segment where she was opining about the impeachment effort. And all of it was about, are the Democrats really doing the best thing for Democratic chances in 2020? How might this affect some of their down ballot races? And is this really the right thing for their image? All of that, the sort of conversation that if you found out that Democratic leaders were doing it behind the scenes, you might rightfully think, well, that seems kind of corrupt and self-serving. Is that really what they should be focusing on when this matter is so important? But it's not behind closed doors, those people thinking about their own career. It is someone with an incredibly powerful, long-reaching media platform entirely focused on the future career prospects of a few Democratic politicians, not on the long-term damage that could be done to our democracy if politicians are told that they can invite foreign meddling into our elections, you can cover it up, and there'll be no consequences. So right on Nadler for focusing on that. Now we move forward to the actual charges. There are apparently going to be two. Here Nadler explains the first.
Today, in service to our duty to the Constitution and to our country, the House Committee on the Judiciary is introducing two articles of impeachment charging the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, with committing high crimes and misdemeanors. The first article is for abuse of power. It is an impeachable offense for the President to exercise the powers of his public office to obtain an improper personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest. That is exactly what President Trump did when he solicited and pressured Ukraine to interfere in our 2020 presidential election.
100% agree. Very important. I don't know if it's necessarily one of the worst things that Donald Trump has done as president, but obviously, clearly, and easily, understandably, an impeachable offense that he has committed there. At least in terms of it being revealed, seems unprecedented, although not unexpected, because as we've talked about many times, Donald Trump has been telling us over and over again that this is exactly the sort of thing that he would do. He does not believe that it's wrong to try to get foreign leaders and foreign governments to meddle in our elections for the personal electoral benefits of one politician, as long as it's him. He doesn't think that that's wrong. And we need to make clear, as a country, do we think that it's wrong? Or do we think that, two elections from now, it should come down to, did the Democrats get enough help from Morocco? Or was it outweighed by the help that Azerbaijan, gave to the Republican nominee? Like, is that what we want? Obviously not. And I think we all know that what he did is wrong. Some of us, 30% of the country, can't admit it because we adore Donald Trump more than the very concept of democracy. But everybody fundamentally understands that what was done was wrong. It can't be accepted. And it's sort of, it doesn't matter in terms of his impeachment, but it's even more offensive that he thinks he can get away with this abuse of power, of using the power and prestige of his office to benefit himself personally. When we gave him 100, 200 of those free, how many times has he benefited himself financially using the power of his office? He's still doing it. Republicans are constantly holding meetings and events at his offices right now. Foreign leaders are doing the same. He has benefited himself so much, and that has been totally allowed. Almost nobody even talks about emoluments. But the line has to be drawn somewhere. The Democrats wanted to draw it at not trying to sway an election with foreign interference. And he finds that to be unacceptable. But that is not the only charge. We also have obstruction of Congress, as Nadler will explain here.
These actions, moreover, are consistent with President Trump's previous invitations of foreign interference in our 2016 presidential election. And when he was caught, when the House investigated and opened an impeachment inquiry, President Trump engaged in unprecedented, categorical, and indiscriminate defiance of the impeachment inquiry. This gives rise to the second article of impeachment for obstruction of Congress. Here, too, we see a familiar pattern in President Trump's misconduct. A president who declares himself above accountability, above the American people, and above Congress's power of impeachment, which is meant to protect against threats to our democratic institutions, is a president who sees himself as above the law.
So that is, of course, accurate. And it's never been as accurate as it is about Donald Trump, because not even related to the impeachment inquiry, but if you've been watching his legal struggles both in DC and in New York, his lawyers have gone, this is on financial matters, but they have gone with the legal argument, the attempted legal argument that has been shot down, thankfully, that because he is president, he cannot be charged with literally anything. That is going way beyond using the OLC notes from the 70s when it comes to whether or not he can actually be indicted. They believe that he is literally above the law, and they have attempted to use that as their legal defense in all matters, from actual potentially impeachable consequences involving Ukraine, all the way down to trying to protect his tax documents from being given to Democratic leadership in Congress. And so that's 100% true. Now, where Nadler, I guess, sort of loses me or doesn't go far enough is those two charges make all the sense in the world. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter how many you have in a legal sense. Any one being passed means that the president is impeached, and then it goes to the Senate for the next step, obviously. But I mean, he alluded to there the massive obstruction of justice that was unveiled in the Mueller report. He alluded to it, but it's not in the charges. It was going to be initially. That was what we heard. That was the leak, was that those obstructions of justice would be summed up in 1-2, but they're not, which means that since we're unlikely to have a second push for impeachment later on in Donald Trump's term, that obstruction of justice will never, never have any consequences for Donald Trump. It was revealed plain as day for all to see, but in terms of legal consequences, there will be nothing. So they've got him on abuse of power, obstruction of Congress, obstruction of justice. Totally fine, no consequences. And look, we can have a long conversation about strategically or whatever, was it wiser to focus this on one thing versus tying in all of the other horrible things that he's done as president? We've been having that conversation for literally months now, and I don't know. But But I feel like this is the time when it should have been a bigger part of the conversation, not just having that done behind closed doors in committee rooms for a couple of weeks. Because those things are now effectively off limits. It wouldn't make sense for them to try to pursue them later on when this was their big opportunity. And if they want to sway as many people, bring over as many people as possible into sort of understanding and believing that this is an actionable set of charges against Donald Trump, it is pretty limited. It's clear to me, but still it might be able to be pitched as limited to a regular person. We'll have to see. Anyway, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, Jordan Yule's gonna join us and be breaking down some of the big news of the day, including Donald Trump responding to the IG report released yesterday. We'll have that for you after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump has been hyping up the IG report into the origins of the FBI investigation of his campaign for what feels like years now. And spoiler alert, it blew apart all the conspiracy theories that he and others in right-wing media have been spreading. So with that, how did Donald Trump respond to the release of the report? Here's a bit of what he said.
"Disgrace what's happened with respect to the things that were done to our country. It should never again happen to another president. It is incredible, far worse than I would have ever thought possible. And it's an embarrassment to our country. It's dishonest. It's everything that a lot of people thought it would be, except far worse."
And joining us now to break down Donald Trump's response and the IG report, progressive activist Jordan Yule, welcome back to the show.
John, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. So you heard that clip. There were a lot of specifics referenced by the president, very specific language. He clearly had read it and remembered details of it. No, he was speaking so vaguely. It's as bad as I said it would be. No, it was actually worse than I said it would be. So I feel like this is always my first question to you. Are you surprised, Jordan?
This is always my response. No, not surprised, because no matter what it was going to say, if it was even the slightest bit negative, Trump, his lackeys, his circle would just deny the findings, attack the findings, and possibly, as we're seeing now with Christopher Wray, attack the people who are supporting it. The evidence that we've seen throughout this entire process has been, Trump's campaign very likely had back channel communications with Russian officials. You know, there was clearly something happening, but what this report confirmed was there was no malice in the origin of this investigation into those allegations. The only thing that they could really latch onto, which I don't think they're doing quite coherently, is the FISA court findings regarding mm-hmm. Carter Page. There might not have been, clear protocol, concrete evidence to launch that inquiry into Carter Page. But that reflects issues raised by liberals after and leftists after Snowden's document release in 2013 about how FISA is just a rubber stamp for what we now term the deep state. This is just like there's no real oversight into the FISA court.
Yeah, and I think it's important for us to point out that for all that Trump and his backers have been talking about issues with the FISA court for the past 2 years, what have they proposed as reforms for it? Literally nothing. They like it as an applause line, but they don't actually talk about any substantive changes to it going forward. Because aside from their issues with they don't want Donald Trump being investigated, they generally like the way that that process has worked.
Absolutely. You know, it gives the FBI, it gives the CIA, it gives carte blanche into any sort of inquiry that could be otherwise lawless. There's no real oversight. There's no public scrutiny. It's just like judges. It's the vast majority. I think it's in the 90% range of inquiries or requests to the FISA court get just approved for investigations, for documents, for spying, surveillance, all this kind of stuff. Even down to like what Snowden revealed was just like every Verizon customer's data.
Yeah.
Like there's no real oversight.
So look, I'm going to get to some of the actual key findings from the report in just a second, but I want to go to a bit more of Donald Trump's response from yesterday. Because honestly, I think there's a good chance you might have been following this a bit more than I did. He makes a reference in this video, Jordan, you'll see that I don't actually understand what he's trying to say. So perhaps you can help me figure it out, but here's the video.
What they were doing and what they would have done if I didn't make a certain move that was a very important move, because it would have been even worse, if that's possible. And they might have been able to succeed. This was an overthrow of government. This was an attempted overthrow. And a lot of people were in on it. And they got caught. They got caught red-handed.
What is the particular move that I made that stopped it from being even worse, if you can imagine it?
The only thing, I don't know, but the only thing I could think of would be firing Comey. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I could really see him latching onto, because, you know, no one on even on the right has really pushed back on that. And to some extent, there really wasn't much pushback on the left. And he got his guy in, Ray. But now the thing is, like, Ray is defending the findings of the IG report. So Trump is attacking him. So it's not a clear, coherent point he's making, but I think that's what he's referring to.
Yeah, and look, we're gonna get to Ray in a second, but he constantly has to attack as effectively agents of the deep state, people that he appointed to their positions. And it's gotta be mental exercise for his followers to continually go back and forth between these are the best people because Donald Trump chose them, slash they're trying to take down Donald Trump, so they must be the deep state. But then why would he have actually chosen them? And I guess the only way to square the circle is something something QAnon. I honestly don't know.
Exactly.
But let's go to some of the actual findings, because he's giving his response. It's clear that he hasn't actually read any of the report, but some of the key findings include that the FBI had an authorized purpose to launch the Russia investigation. The Bureau's use of confidential informants complied with the rules. There is, quote, no documentary or testimonial evidence that political bias or improper motivation influenced the decisions to open the four individual investigations into Papadopoulos, Page, Flynn, and Paul Manafort. Now, you alluded to this, I believe, but the biggest area where hypothetically the right could attack the FBI coming out of the report is revealed in this. There were significant inaccuracies and omissions in applications for warrants to surveil Page, and FBI agents failed to meet the basic obligation to make sure the applications were scrupulously accurate. But I have not heard much talk about Carter Page over the past 24 hours. A lot more just assertions that this confirms everything they've been saying. And as you alluded to, Christopher Wray says he has a list of, I think, 40 different reforms he's going to be making inside of the FBI as a response to this IG report. But that apparently wasn't enough for Donald Trump, who tweeted, I don't know what report current director of the FBI Christopher Wray was reading, but it sure wasn't the one given to me. With that kind of attitude, he will never be able to fix the FBI, which is badly broken, despite having some of the greatest men and women working there. So does he fire Christopher Wray for reforming the FBI after the IG report?
Oh, that'd be something. You never know with this guy. He's just like, you know, complete mood swings, unpredictable, just goes with whatever Fox tells him to do. It could happen, but it just shows like no matter what they found, he was going to summarily dismiss the entire report if it was even the slightest bit negative. On the Carter Page stuff, for Trump to talk about it is a really like finely like tuned, like you have to really finesse the details. And for someone like him, He's completely unable to do that. Mm-hmm. That's why he speaks in these vague generalities. Everything's bad. The deep state is collectively attacking me. All these sorts of things that plays well to a wider audience. Very few people in his base really know the details around the Carter Page stuff. So they really can't get into it. That's like the only thing they had. But because they rely on these sweeping attacks, and Fox included, they were left with like pretty much nothing.
So you brought up Fox. So let's turn briefly to that. Virtually no one has spent more time over the past year or two hyping up the IG report, assuming that it is going to reveal this deep state conspiracy to overthrow Donald Trump than Sean Hannity. And so when the IG report comes out and it doesn't confirm anything of what he's saying, you would think this might be an opportunity for some reflection and self-analysis and growth. But instead, you got this.
Well, everything we said, everything we reported, everything we told you was dead on, center accurate, and the mob and the media has missed what is the biggest abuse of power corruption scandal in the history of the country. It is this report, putting aside whatever differences, and for the attorney general and for John Durham to come out like they have, and I'll get to these statements in a second. And it is all there in black and white. It's all there. Put the conclusion differences aside for a second here.
Okay, so Jordan Ewell, putting aside the conclusion differences, wait, why is that what you would put aside? That seems like an important part of this. But anyway, I bring this up to you because I know that for a long time, like your job was to follow these sorts of people, the conspiracy theories they're spreading. There was nothing there. It might be there in black and white, but there was nothing there for what he's been hyping up to his audience. So where do you go from here if you're a right-wing conspiracy theorist?
It's just, I don't even know how to describe my frustration with this, because it's something that I've seen manifest in people that I know back home in Ohio who lean right. It's they rely on people like the Fox hosts, like Rush Limbaugh, like Glenn Beck, to inform them, because they've been conditioned for 20 years, 30 years to distrust the media, to think Democrats are evil, and to think that no matter what, the alternative is always worse. So just go with the Republican Party line, it's going to be okay. So for Hannity to just say explicitly, we've been dead on, after he's openly lied to them for 2 years, it's just an abuse of like a really vulnerable group. These people rely on him and look to him, and he's just taking advantage of them for personal gain. For him to say this is just like so beyond the pale.
Yeah.
So
I guess I'm curious for your prediction then. So he's coming out the gate saying everything that we were telling you was confirmed, but it wasn't. So I'm curious, do you think that that's damage control and he just jettisons the whole IG report, moves on to something else? Or does he in fact double down and hope that people will just trust him and not their lying reading eyes?
So yeah, Hannity's whole shtick relies on people not reading, not actually questioning what he tells them, not consulting other sources. His whole media brand relies on people being ignorant. So he'll do this for a couple of days. He'll drum up support for Trump. They'll portray Trump as a victim, and then they'll slowly move on to the next thing and just hope people forget. Because even the slightest bit of scrutiny would kind of unravel this entire thing. And Hannity has absolutely no defense.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break, but Jordan, if you can stick around, we got a couple different topics, including Pete Buttigieg, which I know you're eager to talk about. So we're gonna take a short break and come back with a lot more. Back in September at a Bernie Sanders rally, a Navy Air Force veteran, John Weigel, went viral when he talked about how his just crushing medical debt was causing him to have suicidal thoughts. And as a result of that, Bernie Sanders reached out to him, helped him to raise money, and got him back on his feet. And now fast forwarding to this week, John Weigel appeared again, and this happened.
Thank you, Bernie. Because of your support, Senators Cortez, Masto, and Jackie Rosen got involved and straightened out my bills with TRICARE. And I was retroactively reinstated, and I only had to pay the $29.50 a month from when they canceled my insurance without my knowledge. So thank you for rescuing me. And I have this to give you. This. Thank you, Ben. This is my leather flight jacket that I earned in Naval Air Crew Candidate School exactly 25 years ago.
As a nation, we can disagree about a war. We can disagree about foreign policy. But when brave people like John put their lives on the line to defend our country, when they come home, they will receive the best quality health care that this country can provide them. And they will not have to go deeply in debt or be harassed by bill collectors for some stupid bureaucratic reason.
As that's just amazing. When Bernie comes out, like, you can't help but like get a little bit choked up. And we're joined once again by progressive activist Jordan Ewell. Jordan, I know that you have many times used your social media platform in the same way to try to help out people who are down on their luck. And so how did you react when you saw what Bernie had been able to do with John Weigel?
So when I watched that clip, and I try not to be, you know, really big into a cult of personality for pretty much any politician, maybe outside of like AOC, but like it was really tough. Yeah, it just you got to hold these people to account, right? But like this man, it was tough here. It was just like, you know, you just wanted to go all in because this is someone who with Bernie very clearly cares about the common person. In a time when income inequality is high, politicians are just for the most part in it for themselves. You have someone like Sanders who's out there fighting for people like us, who cares about the common person, the working person, the struggling vet who's contemplating taking his life because his health insurance bills are just too insurmountable. We need people. We need more people like that in politics, but we especially need someone like that running the country.
Yeah, and you know, it probably doesn't even make sense for me to cover this today because everybody has seen this story, because it's so amazing that the mainstream media has of course picked it up and is running with, no, they don't care at all. Not at all. If it was literally any other candidate in the race right now, if Bullock jumped back in with this, it would be news, but it's Bernie Sanders. And so, no, I saw Dave Weigel, he was tweeting about it. But outside of that, the mainstream media, not particularly interested in this awesome and heartwarming bit of political news.
Well, yeah, but it also speaks to the power of institutions like TYT and independent progressive media. We can't rely on the mainstream media to keep us abreast of things like this when it happens, and especially not to talk about real issues that, you know, could jeopardize their power dynamic. These are huge corporations, and a lot of their advertising dollars comes from the health insurance industry. It especially comes from like really high dollar politicians. Why would they ever threaten that?
Yeah.
For them to cover it would be to, you know, affect their bottom line.
100%. Let's turn now to another part of the Democratic primary. Yesterday, we did a segment on the damage report that was incredibly critical of how Pete Buttigieg was answering questions about his closed door fundraiser policy and his secretive bundler list of donors. And we said he needed to answer for this or change the policy. And now, apparently, he has. The presidential campaign of South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg announced Monday that it will allow members of the news media to cover future private fundraisers and would disclose the names of super donors known as bundlers. Campaign manager Mike Schmoll says, from the start, Pete has said it's important for every candidate to be open and honest, and his actions have reflected that commitment. So look, when someone does the wrong thing, we criticize them. When they change that policy, I believe that they should be commended for doing that, assuming they have actually done it and they don't, you know, change back as soon as the cameras are gone. But Jordan, what do you think about Pete Buttigieg actually changing his policy in the face of the criticism that he's received?
I am in no hurry to congratulate or thank Pete Buttigieg for this because—
Are you implying that he might not actually follow through?
I think Pete Buttigieg is one of the most absolutely blood-sucking people in politics. He's like a total corporate leech. He is the most self-serving individual in the Democratic race. At a time when more and more people are talking about getting money out of politics, when it's becoming a national bipartisan issue, Pete is working to undo all of that progress on this self-aggrandizing crusade. He's the one who has the most billionaire donors. He's the one that's still trying to do the, well, up until like him getting yelled, or just a simple question from a kid with Iowa Student Action asking him if he would stop, his smug, curt response saying no, going viral, that's the time when Pete finally undid it. But the reason he started doing it was because he was exposed as to having a bundler that was the city attorney in Chicago that sought to hide the video footage of Laquan McDonald getting shot by Chicago police. He was transparent up until that point, and in response, it wasn't, hey, maybe we vet our donors a little bit more. It's, we're just going to go completely dark. Doesn't matter who we get money from, we're just going to hide and it would be completely obfuscate the process. This isn't a transparent move. It's a self-serving move. And he's trying to save face because that moment of him telling a kid no went viral.
Yeah. And by the way, in no small part, thanks to you spreading that video, because I saw that all over the place in Newsweek and a bunch of different places. And so good work there. I'm trying to be encouraging in the right direction. What makes me feel a little bit better about this is that I think that people are on this beat and they're not going to just be like, oh, okay, he's good, let's ignore it. I feel like if he tries to backtrack on this, if he begins to, like, hey, he has some public fundraisers, but then also has closed door, I feel like that will come out. And hopefully the people that have been uncovering so much up until this point will continue doing that great work when it comes to his campaign.
Yeah, I hope so. But you know, if you think Pete Buttigieg is an honest broker in politics, I've got a bridge to sell you. Because this guy is just like he'll do whatever he can to get elected. It's clearly about power. We've seen time and time again people who have known him throughout his life come out and say like, this is just someone who from childhood has been obsessed with power and becoming president. And you know, throughout the course of his life, he's turned a blind eye to moral quandaries, as we've seen with the McKinsey work. Mm-hmm. You know, to further his own persona, his connections, his wealth. I do not trust this guy at all, and nobody else should as well.
Okay, that I think is a great note to end on with Pete Buttigieg. There's one other topic I do want to get your opinion on, though. This morning, the top 10 Time nominees for Person of the Year were lowered down to 5. We'd originally had Pelosi and Zuckerberg, Trump and Rapinoe, the whistleblower, Xi Jinping, Jacinda Ardern, Greta Thunberg, the Hong Kong protesters, and Rudy Giuliani. I cannot believe that Rudy Giuliani is on that list and AOC is not. I'm so angry about that, but that has gone down to 5 now. And so we'll know tomorrow who the Time Person of the Year is, but it's now the final 5 is Pelosi, Trump, the whistleblower, Greta, and the Hong Kong protesters. I have a preference, Jordan. Who do you think deserves the recognition? And separately, who do you think will actually get it?
Okay, so who I think deserves it, I think should be the Hong Kong protesters. I think anytime you have a mass mobilization of people for this long in the face of police and state violence, you know, fighting for independence and democracy, that could be celebrated. I also think the whistleblower has a good shot just because this person is the reason why so many different things are in motion in American politics. Those would be really cool. Greta would be cool. I think the whistleblower is going to get it, but ultimately nobody wants this more than Trump. Mm-hmm. This is everything to Trump. This is the same guy who had photoshopped covers of him on Time in his golf course. And also, like, it very clearly like appeals to him in other people too. Like, this is valuable currency. He hired someone at a senior State Department level who in her admission or her application process submitted a fake Time magazine cover to try to trick them into thinking that she was on Time and she got the job. Like, this is everything to him. It might be more valuable than the presidency itself.
Yeah, so more important than who I think should come in first, I think that they don't do this, but I think that for the final 5, they should number them, and I think he should come in 5th. I think that would be awesome. I disagree to some extent. Look, I don't want to be the person to say that the Hong Kong protesters shouldn't get it, but I think Greta's got to get it. I think, and she doesn't want it, by the way. That's all the more reason that she should get it, is that she has no interest in it. But she has done so much this year to get people to focus on climate change. And I know that it has planted the seeds in young people that will be, we will be benefiting from that for years or decades to come. And this is the most important issue. And so I think that the people who are doing the most to raise awareness on that deserve the recognition. That is why Greta should get it, and AOC should be in the shortlist. That said, you kind of swayed me on the whistleblower. I could see them giving it. They like that sort of thing. In fact, whistleblower got it back in 2002, I think. I'm worried that they'll give it to Trump again. I really don't want to see it. Not right before Christmas. Come on, time. Don't do it.
Yeah, I hope not. It could just, if Greta wins, can you imagine the outrage from the right? Like, they were already upset when she came to the States and was giving speeches. It just, you know, like you said, encouraging young people to think about the future of the planet and climate change in general, and really inspiring millions of people around the world. They are going to lose their mind. And, you know, subliminally, it might be because they know it means a lot to Trump, but like, they hate her for some reason. Mm-hmm. It's just like they want her to shut up. And it just speaks to this weird dynamic in the country where, you know, a lot of people in politics just want kids to shut up. Don't participate at all. And then at 18, you're expected to vote. Like, how does that work? It's not an on off switch. You need to encourage that type of thinking. So that would be a really cool moment if she won.
I couldn't agree more. We'll have to see. We should find out tomorrow. As always, Jordan Ewell, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We're taking a short break. We come back. I'm going to be breaking down the Golden Globes nominations. Emily Vanderwerf of Vox is going to join us after this. Yesterday, the year's Golden Globe nominees were announced. And while the people and shows that were nominated are interesting, in some ways, I'm actually more interested in some of the shows and actors and actresses that didn't merit a nomination. And joining me now to break down a whole bunch of issues in this area, critic at large for Vox, Emily Vanderwerf, welcome to the Damage Report.
Hey, it's so great to be here.
Very glad to have you here. And I just want to say I enjoyed your write-up on Vox about the Golden Globes nominations.
Thank you so much.
Great work there. I wanted to start off with sort of a general overview to the Golden Globes. You refer in the article to the awards show as the weirdest awards show. What makes it stand out so much from the Emmys and the Oscars?
Well, it is voted on by a group of journalists who are a very small number of people, usually affiliated with publications not based in the US. I'm not saying anything wrong with that. I'm just saying they are not, you know, if you think about film journalists, they were not the Roger Eberts and Pauline Kaels of the world. So one of the things that they do is their membership is so small, they're very easy to be wined and dined by the studios. And that has long been a question of corruption within like how these are campaigned. And they do have guidelines, but those guidelines are stretched frequently. But one of the things that is true is that like they love to have big stars show up at the Golden Globes. So if your project has big stars in it, it is far more likely to be nominated. It basically has to be a total disaster to be ignored. And even then, it sometimes ends up pulling in big nominations. Hmm.
Do you think that there's a good example of that in this year's nominations?
You know, I am not a huge fan of Apple TV Plus's The Morning Show, but it sure does star Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. And you'd better believe both the show and both of those actors were nominated. And like, that's a really good reason why. Its reviews are fine. They're not great. They're also not like terrible, but it's definitely the kind of show the Golden Globes go for over something like HBO's comic book adaptation Watchmen, which I think is a much better program, but is really not a Golden Globe show.
Yeah, you know, I'm watching both, and I think The Morning Show is perfectly fine. Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon are good. Yeah. I think Reese is better on the show, but yeah, The Watchmen is, it's like nothing that I've seen on TV before, and yet they didn't seem to care. I did want to talk about some of the snubs, though, because I think a lot of people initially noticed, and you talk about it in the article, that When They See Us, which is critically acclaimed, no nominations, Ava DuVernay, nothing. That seems like a weird slight.
Yeah, When They See Us is one of the TV projects of the year. Its cast is fantastic. It is a tremendous piece of television making. And the fact that they snubbed it entirely when they gave Netflix over 30 nominations on other projects, The Golden Globes have always had a problem with diverse representation, particularly among people of color. And that's part of the reason the Oscars often have problems with diverse representation, because the Golden Globes set the slate for the year. Mm-hmm. Now, when they see us as a TV project and thus ineligible for the Oscars, but it is an example of this larger problem with the Golden Globes.
Yeah, and there was this other show that I've always been a fan of. Not a lot of people know about it, but it's a show, Game of Thrones. And yeah, some people have liked it. And Kit Harington got nominated for his portrayal of Jon Snow. Other than that, nothing for the final season of one of the biggest TV shows in history. That seemed weird.
Yeah, it's you know, quite the cult favorite, Game of Thrones. I really do think it's strange that Kit Harington is only the second actor to ever be nominated from the show. Peter Dinklage was nominated for the show's second season back in 2012, but this is the first time an actor has been nominated since then. The show itself has been nominated many times and has never won. It's obviously not going to win this year because it's not up, but maybe Kit Harington will win and become only the second Golden Globe won by Game of Thrones.
And it just seems so bizarre because if I remember correctly, at last year's Emmys, the I think that Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner and Brianna, the actress who plays Brianna Tarth, were all nominated in the same category. And nothing at the Golden Globes. That's
part of the issue is that the Golden Globes have these weird catch-all supporting categories. So where the Emmys have supporting actress in a drama series, where indeed four different actors from Game of Thrones were nominated, the Golden Globes have just supporting actress in a drama, comedy, or limited series. And it just, everybody gets funneled in there, and it's very hard to crack that lineup. Yeah. It's just exceedingly random.
So one of the other things that you discuss in your piece on Vox is that while When They See Us was totally snubbed, there was a lot of recognition for politically relevant or, you know, like interesting for the context sorts of shows. What are some of those that you think it's important that we recognize?
You know, one big example would be Netflix's Unbelievable, which is not necessarily political in the sense you'd think of it, but is about problems around the country with how law enforcement investigate rape and sexual assault cases. It's based on a true story about a young woman who said that she was raped, and police essentially bullied her into recanting her testimony. And then she was like written off as someone who had given this false report. And it turned out it was true. And there was a serial rapist who was operating in this area. And two woman police officers caught him several years later. And like, this is the story of that. And it is a really beautiful and sometimes brutal piece of television. And you also want to look at things like, I don't know how, again, this is another one that's sort of politically relevant as a sidebar, but something like Succession is a show that is talking about runaway income inequality, runaway wealth inequality in the US in its own way. And like, the Golden Globes have a lot of projects like that where they're talking about political issues as a sidebar. And that's particularly true in like the movie nominations, where you have something like Parasite, another movie about wealth inequality, and you have a movie like Jojo Rabbit, which is about, I don't think is as good of a movie, but certainly is talking about the rise of fascism. Mm-hmm. So like, there are movies that are taking on big political topics, and those did really well.
Yeah. It's weird that at this time, portrayals of income inequality, people would be finding those particularly important. Emily Vandewerf, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your work at Vox and for you coming on the show today.
It was a pleasure to be here.
We're gonna take a short break, stick around. Okay, so as it turns out, we've only got a couple minutes left in the show. So some of what we wanted to get into substance-wise is probably gonna have to wait until tomorrow when Jared Jackson will be joining me in studio. But if you're a fan of the show and this is the last couple of minutes, you've stuck around this long, you probably are, or you fell asleep and the podcast kept playing. I wanted to let you know about a couple of other ways that you can either help out the show or enjoy the sort of content that we like to produce. So one is, you've probably heard this before, if you haven't already rated and reviewed the podcast on iTunes, that is just about the most helpful thing you can do for helping people to discover the podcast and bring new people into this thing that we're doing. I wanted to read the most recent review is by Linz Will. And it's probably going to make the control room angry. It says, John is seriously the smartest man alive, that is all. Agree to disagree, there are a few smarter that I've identified, but Linz Will, thank you for that. So anyway, if you can leave a review, if you can give a 5-star rating, we really do appreciate that. In addition, something we've been doing recently here for the past couple of months is before we go live, about half an hour, three quarters of an hour before we go live, on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thedamagereport, we've been doing live videos where it's just me and sometimes my guest for the day talking back and forth with you about something in the news. We respond to your comments, we answer questions and things like that. So if you go to youtube.com/thedamagereport and subscribe and ring the bell to get live video notifications, you can take part in that and get a little bit of commentary that doesn't make it into the full show, but also we can talk, I can figure out, you know, find out what you think about things and all of that. So that's just a couple of more ways that you can support the show and consume our material if you're interested in that. Thank you so much for joining me throughout the day. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.